With us today, we have a very special guest. Sammy Canold is with us. Sammy is the director of the upcoming Ragtime on Ellis Island, which conveniently is found on the web at ragtimeonellis.com, which is coming up Monday, August 8th, 2016. And Sammy, tell us about Ragtime on Ellis. What is going to happen out there? Is it a concert? Is it the full show? What are we going to see when we get out there?
Certainly. So Ragtime is a musical that talks about three different groups at the turn of the century and sort of weaves their stories together. And one of those groups is immigrants from all over the world coming to America through Ellis Island. And when I was thinking about site-specific musicals, because I did a lot of work in site-specific theater in college, I made a list of all the musicals that could be performed site specifically, because mm-hmm. I was just so in love with that form of art. And Ragtime was at the top of that list because Ellis Island is so important to me. My many of my ancestors came through it. And I think that the musical and the site have so much to say to each other. So that was about 2 years ago. And we, since then, our team has been in dialogue with the folks at Ellis Island, creating what could be a production of Ragtime on Ellis Island. So this summer, on August 8th, we're doing a developmental concert of songs from the show. And the idea is to sort of test out what material from the show feels like in the space, and to see what the possibilities are for a fully staged production of the show on the island.
So for folks who are not in the New York City area, can you describe what Ellis Island is for them?
Certainly. So 40% of Americans can trace their heritage back through Ellis Island. That figure always astounds me. And Ellis Island is the site through which, between 1892 and 1954, 12 million immigrants migrated to the United States. It was kind of a processing site for immigrants. The highest population was coming from Europe, but really from all over the world. And when you came to Ellis Island as an immigrant, you were your papers were processed, you were inspected. 2% of immigrants were turned away, but for everybody else, it was a gateway to America. And I think it plays such an important role in the heritage of so many Americans. And in terms of the island itself, it's really quite beautiful, and we will be performing in the Registry Room, which is this beautiful grand hall where the immigrants were processed. It was the main processing room. So it's really, I think, quite special to be performing in that room essentially 100 years later.
And a lot of people mistake Ellis Island as being the home of the Statue of Liberty.
It's not, but the Statue of Liberty is quite close. And yeah. When you take a ferry to Ellis Island just during the day, the ferry actually stops at the statue on the way to Ellis Island. So you can visit both in the same day. It's very convenient.
So this is a one night only event. It's going to be by invitation only. So unfortunately, put down your Today's Ticks app trying to buy tickets to this for right now. Perhaps it'll be a more open-ended run in a year or so. But tell us about the evening and the concert that you're going to be putting on. Who's involved with it? How, you know, you want to give us a little glimpse into what you're going to be doing?
Certainly. So we are presenting 11 songs. It'll be about an hour. And these are songs that we've chosen because we think they highlight themes in Ragtime that have the most to say to the island. So, of course, we're including songs that talk about the immigrant experience through the character of Tata. And so all those songs like A Shtetl is America and Success and Journey On, all these songs in Ragtime that touch on the immigrant experience. But in addition, we're also featuring songs such as Back to Before, which talk about the ideas of autonomy and liberty, but in a broader sense. So what does it mean for a woman to have autonomy at the turn of the century? And how does that feel when we put it in the context of the beacon of Ellis Island and what it symbolizes? And I should say that this list is this list of songs is something that we were so fortunate to work with Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty, who wrote the score, to you know, curate and make sure that we're presenting something that represents the piece as it should. So the evening will feature those songs, and then guests who come to the concert will have the opportunity to explore the island and the exhibits that are in the museum on the island. We're very excited about that.
I know that when you have events like this, you can't lock in casts because you never know what's going to happen with them. But who do you think there is going to be performing at that?
So this summer we actually have quite a large cast locked in. I think we have about 32 people on board as of today. and more every day. Just to give you some highlights, Laura Michelle Kelly is playing Mother. Brandon Victor Dixon is playing Cole House. Robert Petkoff, who was Tata in the 2009 revival, will be reprising his role. Shayna Taub, who's actually obsessed with Emma Goldman, is playing Emma Goldman. Michael Park is playing Father, and the list goes on. But we're really excited about this cast and quite honored that they've all been as thrilled about this idea as we are.
So let's step back from Ragtime for a moment and talk about Sammy and what else you're working on. Are you working on a site-specific version of Violet on a bus?
Yes, that's at the ART in April.
April of 2017?
2017,
yes. And you've done this once before, or maybe more than once before?
Once before. In college.
Once before, you did it at Stanford University in 2013. So what made you, what attracted you to site-specific theater, and have you been involved with the other site-specific stuff that's going on these days?
Certainly. My heroes in life are Diane Paulus and Rachel Chavkin, and I've been fortunate to work for and be working for both. As an assistant, and I saw Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812 in my freshman year of college, and I saw The Donkey Show, and I saw Pippin, and you know, and Donkey Show and Great Comet are both kind of site specific in their own way, and that really kind of got me thinking about space. And Violet actually came out of, you know, thinking about everything that Diane says about space and reinventing the experience and the relationship with the audience. There's a grant at Stanford called Redesigning Theater. I think it's no longer, but it was wonderful. The prompt of the grant was essentially, you know, do something out of the box with space. And I'd always loved Violet. And so I wrote a proposal to do Violet on a moving bus. They were crazy enough to say yes, and we went from there, and it was the best theatrical experience I'd ever had. And I was just so enamored by how site-specific theater allows a story and a site to be both lending each other meaning symbiotically. I just think that's really cool. And that sort of led to making that list of what else could I do in the genre, because I'm just obsessed with it. So... That's how that came about.
And you are working again on Natasha Pierre, which is coming up very soon for you, right?
Yes, yes. It goes into rehearsals in September, and it's just been thrilling to be a part of that process, because it's exactly the kind of theater that I'm interested in, but breaking into, you know, a traditional Broadway space, and what does that mean to kind of reinvent relationships and, break boundaries on Broadway. So that's been really thrilling.
I saw a floor plan for the theater where you're going to be moving some seats around and bringing a sort of a runway up through the house.
Yes. Yes.
Which was easier to do when you were in a tent, but in a Broadway theater, there's a little bit more paperwork to do there.
Oh, certainly. There are, from what I understand, every single day, meetings and figuring out how this is happening. But it's really going to be stunning, I think, what's happening to the Imperial. So everybody will have to come and see in October.
So you did a more, shall I say, and correct me if I'm wrong, traditional production of Les Misérables?
Traditional in some senses. What
made you want to direct Les Misérables?
In seventh grade, I played the role of Eponine. I am no longer an actor for many good reasons. But I kind of fell in love with the show vis-a-vis that character. But I love how it's such an epic tale and that it also communicates history. I'm so interested in educating through theater. And so what we did with that production was I was reading about Victor Hugo and his experiences with opera. And we essentially crafted the show in the style of a 19th century grand opera. And in the lobby before the show had what we called OGEP, the Opera Going Experience Project, which was a sort of pre-show devised experiment where 18 actors from Stanford who were very noble and brave impersonated opera goers who would have been at the opera had Les Mis been performed as an opera in the 18th century or sorry 19th century. We had Monet and Manet and Victor Hugo himself was there. They were all costumed in period dress. And so that was, my attempt at on that show, sort of saying, how can we reinvent the audience's relationship to this show and, expand boundaries of theater there. It was quite the adventure.
When did you make the transition into deciding I'm going to be a director and at what point in your life was that?
So I went to college for education policy. I wanted very badly to be Secretary of Education. About 3 weeks in, I decided that wasn't for me. And I have to say it was really seeing the example of Diane Paulus. I very much believe in what Janine Tesori said in her Tony speech, that you really have to see it to be it. That was the year that Diane was doing Pippin, and she won the Tony, and I was working for the Tony Awards that year. And I stood in the back of Radio City, and I watched her win her Tony, and I was like, I've got to do that. I mean, I always knew I was interested in directing. My family works in entertainment, and they tell me that when I was a toddler, my favorite pastime was putting on shows at the bathroom counter with shampoo bottles. So I think it's always been there, but I don't think I really made the very concrete decision to, pursue a career in this until I saw Diane. And then I knew it was like, I have to be her, and I have to work for her and I have to. So I think that's, especially for young women, that's so monumental to have examples like that.
You're at the back of Radio City Music Hall. You've made this decision in the middle of a speech. What comes next?
I stalked Diane. I thought if I can work for her, then I can find out, what it means to do this kind of work, not just be a female director, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's very broad, but because her work was so exciting to me. And I wrote her way too many letters. Eventually she brought me on as a research intern, and then onto the tour of Porgy and Bess, and then onto Finding Neverland at ART. And then I did Finding Neverland Broadway for a bit. And then from there, when I graduated, Diane Borger at ART said, you know, do you want to come be an artistic fellow here? And that kind of has led to everything else. So the ART is very proudly, you know, where I consider home, and I'm very grateful to everyone there for welcoming me.
So ART, for listeners out there, the American Repertory Theater, is kind of in residence at Harvard University. And so when you said you graduated, was that from an undergraduate perspective or from when you did a graduate school up there?
From undergrad. So I actually did my graduate degree at Harvard concurrently with my first year at ART. So I left Stanford and came straight to ART.
I was wondering how you're getting all this time off to come do all these play with Diane in New York and Rachel Shopkin in New York, is things like that. You've hooked up with two amazing directors who also happen to be women, which is really wonderful. You also did a production, directed a production in 2015 of Evita at Stanford. Tell us, did you do anything new with Evita?
Yes. So I have been quite obsessed with Ava Perón ever since seeing the revival. And so the first thing that I did for that production was find grant funding and went to Buenos Aires to really research and understand this woman. She's so fascinating and so multi-layered. And what we did in that production was typically in Evita, the commentary on Ava's life is given by a male cynic named Che. And it always kind of bothered me that Ava was never really able to respond because Che was always on this sort of higher level. So we basically divided the role of Ava in half. There was Ava in the story. And then we created this character named Santa Evita, who we didn't change any of the dialogue anywhere. But Santa Evita basically took all of the dialogue that was in correspondence with Che, so that Ava was fully in the story. But Santa Evita was like this spiritual character there to defend Ava's legacy. So I think that, you know, from talking to people who saw the production, it's certainly a production that had an opinion. You know, you could not leave that production thinking that we weren't trying to defend Ava. You know, we were. But I think that what it did was sort of illuminate who this woman was, not just as an icon, but also as somebody grappling with her rise, her very rapid rise to fame and her relationship with success and achievement. That story is so dear to me, and I miss it, and I badly would like to work on another production of Evita someday.
Well, Sammy, thank you so much for joining us. Sammy Kunold is the director of Ragtime on Ellis Island, which is coming up on a one-night-only production concert on Monday, August 8th, 2016. And we have links to ragtimeonellis.com in the show notes, and also to sammykunold.com, where you can catch up with Sammy as well. Sammy, thanks so much for visiting with us, and come back and tell us in the fall how everything went.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me. People call it ragtime.
Farmer was well off. Very well off. His considerable income was derived from the manufacture of fireworks and bunting and other accoutrements of patriotism. Father was also something of an amateur explorer.
The house on the hill in New Rochelle was Mother's domain. She took pleasure in making it comfortable for the men of her family.